Hello and welcome to this special edition of PaleoCast. I'm Dave Marshall.
I'm Joe Keating.
I'm John Tennant.
And I'm Laura Soule.
Who's Laura Soule?
I'm the new person.
Yes, Laura's going to be joining us as the fourth member of PaleoCast. So Laura, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do, please?
Sure, yeah. Well, I'm a PhD student, like some of the others. I'm at the University of Oxford. I'm just starting my third year, so the year when you have to actually do a lot of work.
Unlike John and Joe.
So I'm working... My lab group mostly studies fish, but I've managed to avoid that. I'm a paleobiologist, but mostly what I look at is the different methods that people use to understand really big patterns in evolution across the whole of time and for lots of different organisms.
So that's macroevolution.
Yes, exactly, macroevolution. So I look at how we can use fossils to understand macroevolution.
Sounds boring.
What's wrong with fish?
I don't have any problem with fish, but I'm the only person in my lab group who doesn't study them. I feel very left out sometimes.
So is there anything in particular you study, or is it just everything, really?
Oh, so far in my PhD, I pretty much have been studying everything. Really, I'm a vertebraleontologist. That's where my main interests lie. But I've been using data sets from loads of different groups. I'm just about to start a project looking only at marine mesozoic reptiles, so focusing on sauropterygians. Just getting into that. Sauropterygians. Some people will call them dinosaurs of the sea. Other people will get very upset if you said that, I think, because they're not really dinosaurs. So they're very big marine lizards. So they're huge things, meters long. They've got, some of them have tiny little heads and very long necks. They're the things that people thought that the Loch Ness monster might be. It's the only realistic thing for a possible Loch Ness monster. Using that group to try and understand macroevolutionary patterns. So really big patterns in evolution, like in extinction and speciation, that are common to all groups.
So we've recently just celebrated our first birthday here at PaleoCast, and it's a brilliant time just to thank all of our contributors. PaleoCast wouldn't have got anywhere without the time and above all patience of a huge variety of academics that we've interviewed and supplied, who have supplied us with material.
And thanks to everybody who's, you know, shared or commented or done something, engage with us in some way via social media. Thanks. You are our network, you are our listeners, and we love you.
I'll put in some applause there, I think. Yeah, guys, so it's been a busy year. What have been your favourite episodes? What have been your highs and lows of PaleoCast?
You have to ask someone. Specifically.
Joe.
They asked for that, really, didn't they?
Yeah.
So I think my favourite interview was with Rob Nell on sexual selection. He's at Queen Mary's University in London, and he was just an absolute professional. Like, the edit that we produced for that episode, about two or three cuts.
Yeah, I think
he was brilliant.
Pretty much went in just as we recorded it. It was quite a surprise as well, because we didn't really know much about his work when we arranged that interview with him. I'd just seen that he'd done a paper with Richard Forty on the head appendages of trilobites, so the Bulliceros trifurcatus, our PaleoCast logo, that fork on its head. He did a paper with Richard Forty on the possible sexual selection of those appendages, and that's what we really wanted him to talk about. But then when we actually got him into an interview, so much just came up that we weren't expecting, and it was a highlight for me as well, that one.
Who would have thought the bed bugs are so weird?
And John, how about you?
What was the question again?
What were your highs and lows? I think we've just worked out a low.
Lows. None really. Highs. None really.
You've had a pretty quiet year. You've just been on Twitter.
Yeah, pretty much. I guess the high point was probably winning the Science Seeker Award. It's pretty prestigious as far as internet-y science things goes. And yeah, it was an honour to be voted all of probably 3 or 4 times more than everybody else to actually win that. So.
Yeah, thanks everyone who voted.
And I'm sure it was actually just us 4 and no one voted.
Yeah, there was just 4 votes.
No, I didn't vote.
Really?
I didn't know about it until we won the award.
So, Laura, how about you?
Well, obviously, having not been making any of the episodes of the previous year, I've got a bit of a different point of view. But actually, I think my favourite to listen to was probably the very first one that you did. So it was with Layla Batterson. And she actually was in my lab group at Oxford. And it's nice to hear one of your friends on a podcast. And because I wasn't involved back then as well, it was more exciting, I guess. But yeah, it was just really interesting. So all of the work that I do is on really big animals, whereas the stuff that Layla looks at is the very origins of life. And I just think it's fascinating how much we can tell from things that were alive or left traces of their life all those hundreds of millions of years ago.
Is she sitting there with you?
She got a knife to your throat.
I wouldn't put it past her, no.
What about you, Dave? What were your highs and lows?
Well, I think my favourite episode was probably the third one we ever did with the Amber and Parasitism. And that's, as I said at the time of the episode, was what really got me into paleontology in the first place. So getting to talk to George Poynar was something that it was just great. I loved it. And the things that I learned that I still didn't know about, even being familiar with his work, all the insights that he brought, again, it's just great. And just shows like how you can know something about a subject but not know that subject in its entirety. Paleontology is such a huge, huge subject. So
I bet I know your lows.
And my lows? Probably all the
prison.
Editing.
Paleocast prison.
Paleocast prison, yeah. My little office has been my prison. Adobe Audition has been the bars.
Oh no, sorry, I meant oil rig prison.
Yeah, the lows were not being able to deliver episodes, because I love actually making these episodes, and I hope it's the same for all you guys as well, and I hope everyone loves listening to them. But being stuck on that oil rig, nah, that wasn't a good time. Not being able to, like, going missing release deadlines has never been fun. And worrying that we're going to get a day without any downloads, because even a year on, every day we've had a download from someone somewhere. There hasn't been a day where no one's downloaded Paleocast, which I think is quite an achievement, which I'd be very keen on maintaining that. So yeah, being on an oil rig has been a bit of a low.
Did you ever get your bags back?
I did. You know this as well, because this was before we started recording. This was all I could talk about. I got my bags back after a month and a half of them being in Schiphol Airport in Amsterdam. My bags arrived, and all of the cake that was in the bags. Did I talk about the cake that was in the bag?
You talked about the cake.
The cake was gone.
Chocolate cake.
Chocolate cake was gone, man. Someone had been into my bag and had taken out the chocolate cake. Don't know what they did with it. Probably ate it. It's probably what happened. Like someone at Schiphol Airport smelt that cake, opened the bag, and then was too shamed to deliver it and just kept it there for a bit. So, I never got that cake. Man. I think someone should send me a cake. One of our listeners, send the cake to David Marshall, 31 Street, Manchester, UK. And I will eat it.
You've given your address away.
No, I'll bleep it all out.
Just send it to Paleocast. Someone will pick it up somewhere on the internet.
Dave, what do you actually do during the day on the oil rig? Like, what is work? What do you have to do?
A lot of the time, just waiting about for things to happen.
An extortionate amount for it.
A lot of the time, I'm just sat there waiting for the oil rig to actually be drilling in the first place. They do work 24 hours a day, so sometimes I'm on the call. It depends if there's, like, another guy working nights, or if I'm working nights and they're on days. Anyway, a lot of the time it's just waiting, but when the oil rigs are actually drilling, you get the chips of rock that the oil rig drills. So imagine, like, if you drill a hole into the wall, you get the plaster little fragments that come back out. You can't really see much in them or tell much about them because they're all little chips that have absolutely been ground to dust. But the thing that survives, the only thing that can really survive in them, are these microfossils that are so small that they don't get smashed to smithereens. And then looking at those, you can tell, based on the stage of evolution or the certain different assemblages that you can get, you can work out what age a certain rock is. Well, the chippings that you get, you can work out what age they are. And then the oil companies use that to say, okay, we need to keep drilling until we're in rocks of this age and then we'll find oil. Or we need to stop drilling now to do some safety tests before we might enter a rock that has a really high pericity. And those are the kind of rocks that can be dangerous because fluids can flow through a high pericity rock. And if you imagine your stereotypical oil rig, you drill down, you find oil, and oil rig gushes out the top of it, that's the kind of thing that you're trying really hard to not happen. So the big oil disaster, I can't remember what it was called, in the Gulf of Mexico. Deepwater Horizon, that's
the
one.
Deepwater Horizon, yeah.
So, yeah, that's the kind of thing that happens if you can't control the fluids down underneath the surface, because they're all at really high pressure because they're covered in hundreds of metres of water and rock. And so if you drill into one of these rocks, all the fluids just come gushing out of it. And so if you can say... if you can look at the rocks and the fossils in them and say, hey, you're getting close to this really high pressure, high porosity rock, which is going to send water and oil and gas shooting out of this hole, you should really make sure that that isn't going to happen. You should pressurize the hole. And so all of these things can't come out. That's kind of what I do. Tell the oil companies when and where they should be looking out for this stuff, when and where they expect to get different lithologies, different pressures, different everything. So, yep, I've just bored everyone to death.
So you actually save lives, Dave.
I save lives.
Hero.
I'm a
you
hero.
You say stop. Have you ever done it wrong?
Yeah.
Keep going! And then it's just
no one better listen to this. Well... I don't think anyone high up in any of these oil companies is listening. But yeah, you get it wrong. I mean, you're under a lot of time constraints because an oil rig takes like £25 million a day to run or something. I just plucked that figure straight out of the air, but it's multi-million. I'd be pretty sure of that. But it depends how fast they're drilling. If they're drilling a 20, 30 metres an hour and they want a resolution of about 5 metres an hour sample, then you're really hard pressed to try and keep up, and you have to identify so many different fossils and get a good idea of the assemblage. Or you might have a case where you get thousands of a single fossil, but they're not stratigraphically important. They don't tell you a specific age. They might be very long ranging, so from say like the Jurassic straight up until the recent. And so if you get this fossil, it doesn't really mean, you can't really use it to say anything about what age the rock is. It has such a wide range. And those that
could tell you the age of the rock could be really, really rare, and so you might not see it, and so you might end up like saying, don't know where we are, sorry, I can't help you. And that's happens quite a lot of the time. And so, yeah, it's pretty easy to get it wrong, and there are consequences, but fortunately, yeah, it's all been pretty good.
So this is what it's like if you have a proper job and you're a paleontologist.
A proper job, yeah.
Not just a researcher.
Yeah,
but... yeah, I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah, both Joe and I have done this job, and Joe's managed to get out and into a PhD, and I've now got my own company. I'm self-employed, registered under Marshall Biostratigraphic. So if you need any biostratigraphy doing, you can give me a call.
If anyone wants to drill an oil well.
Yeah, if anyone's thinking about drilling some oil in the back garden, I'll come and help you out. Don't worry about it.
For a nominal fee.
For a fee.
Cool.
Cool.
So when are you next off to the oil rigs then, Dave?
It's a good question. I don't get very much notice, to be honest. I get like a couple of weeks at most. But it doesn't. I don't have anything on my schedule for possibly even until the end of the year now. So I'll be able to start work on another paper. So the last paper that I did on my chasmataspidid arthropods, I won't even begin to try and explain what they're like. They're kind of like little scorpion things that lived in the sea in the Paleozoic. So from the Cambrian to Devonian, you can get them, and in really weird places. And there's only about, I'd say, less than 100 for sure in the world that actually exists. So they're a really rare group. And anyway, I'm going to start a new paper on them, because my one that I've been doing for 5 years finally got accepted for publication.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you very much. I'm very, very happy. So it's going to be my first publication. And it was a real uphill struggle, because I was on about 20,000 words. I'd spent like 3 or 4 years doing it, and like all off my own back in my spare time in between working, and I had to fund all the expedition to Russia. Expedition. I had to fund the trip to Russia myself to the museum in Moscow. And then I'm just finally happy that it's all done. So big thanks to James Lansdell for that. Big up.
It's going to be hilarious when no one reads it.
Yeah. Well, so you can all go out there and read it. It'll be great.
So when I first met Dave, all those, two years? I forget.
I don't know, Joe. It feels like a lifetime.
A lifetime ago. Back on the naughty side of the office at iPhone.
Yeah.
The first thing that Dave showed me of his work was this illustration that he was doing, very detailed, of one of his chasmataspid arthropods. Very proud. So it'll be nice to see those things finally published.
Yeah, so I'll be able to do a lot more work on them. I'm so happy that everything's worked out in the end. And I've also got plenty of time for PaleoCast. So the future's looking bright. I'm very happy.
Yay.
So, Joe, why don't you tell us where you're up to?
Well, I'm still working away at fossil fish. So I've got the heterostracans that I've talked about previously, these very early jawless vertebrates that had a large armoured shield covering their head. I'm looking at how they grew and what that can tell us about the very earliest skeletons that evolved in vertebrate evolution. So I'm still working on that, and I should have a poster at this year's PALAS conference at Christmas time. So look out for that. I'm also working on a top secret project that I can't tell you about, but it involves fish, unsurprisingly. So I'm just kind of juggling those projects at the moment. I don't really know which one's going to get done first, but yeah, hopefully I'll be able to finish at least one of them by the end of the year.
So how long's left of your PhD?
So I think I've just finished my first year, so I've got 2 to 2.5 more years before they kick me out.
And has that time just been spent doing all the actual physical work, getting all the data?
This first year has been mainly data collection. So I actually counted up how many flights I've been on this year. So by the end of the year, by Christmas time, I'll have been on 12 flights, I think it is, in all of them to Switzerland.
All of them to the synchrotron.
All of them to go to the synchrotron to scan data and collect. I've got probably over 100 gigs of data of synchrotron scans now. Fish. So I've got, enough data to work through, at least for the foreseeable future. So the next stage of the process really is to go through this data and start to think about what we can learn about these vertebrates and what we can learn about how they grew and what that tells us about the evolution of the skeleton and the evolution of skeletonization. So that's the evolution of the process of building a skeleton.
Joe wants to know where your bones came from.
Exactly. It's a complicated question. So, as I always tell people, the skeleton is actually a chimera. It's a composite of at least 5 different systems that are evolutionarily and also developmentally completely separate. So a lot of people think of the skeleton as like one coherent system, but it's not. It's a load of things cobbled together over evolutionary time.
Could your research gain any kind of insight into how different kind of bone diseases came about at all? Maybe.
So if we look at bone diseases today, the best model we have for the growth of bones and why things can go wrong are by using zebrafish. But zebrafish aren't really closely related to tetrapods, so land vertebrates, like humans. So actually, heterostracans can help us understand how things go wrong, perhaps a bit better than by looking at the rayfin fish that we have today.
And you, John?
What do you want to know?
I want to know where you're up to, what you're doing, what you've been doing for the last year.
Okay, so I'm kind of doing 5 different projects at the moment.
Twitter?
No.
Your blog?
Yeah, obviously I'm doing a lot of that.
Tweeting
kind of
from PaleoCast, drinking, and going to conferences.
I haven't been to many conferences at all. I got invited to one the other day to give a talk, and that's about it. And that was actually on blogging and stuff, so not particularly research related. Research wise, I'm putting the finishing touches on my master's thesis again. This is about the 3rd or 4th time now it's had the final touches added. Also doing some PhD research in the meantime. You know, apparently that's what you should be doing as a PhD student. So,
So you're in your first year too.
Yes, sorry. Yeah, so I'm just coming towards the end of my first year, same time as Joe. And the main thrust of my PhD project is to figure out if there's a kind of hidden mass extinction which we've kind of discarded thoughts of because, you know, everybody loves like the end Cretaceous one or the end Permian one. And I'm looking at 145 million years ago at the Jurassic Cretaceous boundary.
So that's in between the two?
Yes. So, yeah, there's 3 periods in the Mesozoic era. So you have the Triassic, Jurassic, and Cretaceous. And it's kind of been known before that there was some kind of aberration at the Jurassic-Cretaceous boundary. And I'm just looking a bit more detail into the patterns and processes which governed this aberration and trying to figure out the magnitude of change. And at the moment, it does seem like, you know, if I can give away some preliminary results, that there is actually a substantial mass extinction at the time which had serious implications on particularly marine reptiles, hintity hint, Laura, was particularly selective across different tetrapod groups, including things like dinosaurs, pterosaurs, terrestrial crocodiles, terrestrial turtles, and mammals and things like that, and lizards.
So has your first year been all data collection the same as Joe's?
I finished data collection a while back for one part of my PhD. So one part is looking at these biodiversity interactions and seeing what's going on there. And the second part is looking at these little dwarf crocodiles from around the same time called Otoposaurids. And they're really cool. They're like about 30, 40 centimetres long and they're fully grown. And they're just ever so cute, you know, just these... They're really important as well because they actually appear at the base. So if you consider like the evolutionary tree of crocodiles, they actually appear at the base of the group which gave rise to modern crocodiles. So figuring out why they were so successful, perhaps, you know, it maybe has something to do with this nature of being very small or being a dwarf, is so important. So I'm doing a lot of research into them. So first-hand taxonomic work and phylo, you know, all the nitty-gritty bits of systematic paleontology.
Do we get any kind of small crocodiles today?
Yeah, the West African crocodile.
Is that a... Why...
It's a dwarf.
It's a dwarf?
Yeah. So and fully it... grown, it's less than a metre long.
All right, and that survives just perfectly well.
Yep.
What do they eat?
These... What, Otoposaurids?
No, the West African crocodile.
Small vertebrates, invertebrates, dragonflies, fish, pretty much anything which is small. Buffalo.
Miniature buffalo.
Yeah. Dwarf buffalo. They go along with it. It's a very niche system. Although on islands you do get dwarfs.
Yeah, so. Lilliput effect.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Like the dwarf mammoths and stuff of Madagascar.
Have we talked about Lilliput effect yet in an episode?
I don't think we have.
Ah, so I'll add that to the to-do list.
I know someone who can do that. That's Tori Herridge. Hello, Tori, if you're listening. We have you zeroed in.
And so, Laura, we've spoken a bit about what you've been doing, but what are you going to be doing in the next year or so?
Yeah, so, well, as I said, because I'm finishing my second year, going to my third year now, I need to be making sure that I've collected all the data and done all the analyses that I need to do before I start to write everything up. So I'll be finishing off some things that I've been working on for the past year. So there's a project that I was doing looking at the kinds of information that you can use to do different sorts of analyses. So, you know, if you want to figure out the rate that a group of animals was evolving or how often they were going extinct, those kinds of things, what sort of information do you need to be able to do that properly? Because obviously sometimes paleontological information isn't as full as the information that you could get from stuff that's alive. So I was looking at the quality of information that you need to make those kind of deductions in the fossil record. So I'll be writing that up as a paper and submitting it soon. And then, as I said, this stuff with Mesozoic marine reptiles, having a look at some major patterns in their evolution over parts of the Mesozoic, maybe looking at things, different parts of the Mesozoic to other people, maybe looking at things like convergence in form and function, which should be interesting. But yeah, this year is just a case of getting things done.
For a change.
For a change.
Not things done. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think the beginning of your PhD, you've got more... more of a chance to learn lots of different new methods of doing things and figure out how to collect all your data and what it is that you need to collect and that sort of thing, whereas the pressure's on now to write.
First year is the last time in your academic career in which you'll actually be encouraged to procrastinate, so take advantage of it.
Well, that actually makes me feel a little less guilty the last few months.
Go on, guys, so what have you got going on in the future?
So, as I was saying, I've got these two projects that I've been juggling, so I'm going to try and write those both up. I'm presenting a talk and a paper, writing a paper for the Arthur Smith Woodward Conference next year at the Natural History Museum. So I'll be talking about sort of the vertebrate evolutionary tree as it was back then when Arthur Smith Woodward was the curator of the Natural History Museum Fish, and as it is now, and what new technologies have been developed and how that's changed our understanding of early vertebrate evolution. And apart from that, I'm hoping to go stomping around the Welsh borders, going looking for fossil fish. And I'm going to Argentina. We're all going to Argentina.
We're all going to Argentina, yay!
We are all going.
This is for the International Paleontological Congress, which is a massive conference that's held once every 4 years around the world. And next year, it's in Argentina at the end of September into October.
It's like the Paleontological Olympics.
It is.
Comes around every 4 years, and Britain normally embarrasses itself.
It was in London last time, wasn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, and I was old enough to have presented there. The same research that I've only just completed. Several years, 4 years later. Oh, man. Hey, it's out, it's done.
Yep, that's history now.
Coming to a journal near you soon.
What about you, John? What are you up to next year?
I've only got one conference planned at the moment, apart from the one to Argentina, and that's to SVP over... the Society of Vertebrate Paleo, their annual meeting over in Los Angeles. So I've got a poster there, which I'll be presenting. And stopping off at New York and most of Europe on the way to check out more of the fossils of these little atoposaurid croquis. And apart from that, it's just, you know, finishing off a few projects at the moment, like the biodiversity-related stuff, and decide, you know, apply a few more techniques just to see if different techniques give different results on the particular patterns over the Jurassic Cretaceous, and then doing a lot more kind of in detailed work into, you know, the individual groups over the boundary, so your dinosaurs, your crocodiles, your lizards, and all that kind of thing, and seeing exactly what it was which drove their evolution. So I've already got a couple of things in prep there, and yeah, it's just a case of finishing it off at the moment and then doing it again and again and again and also learning how to program, which is fun. I'm sure anyone who's tried it before knows.
What language are you learning?
It is fun.
Ruh, I think it's called.
Oh yeah, I've dabbled in Ruh.
Ruh is easier than Kuh.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Has anyone tried Kuh ad ad?
Briefly.
No, not yet.
For anyone who doesn't know what's going on, like I hardly do, these are all paleo mathematics jokes.
Mm.
Yeah. I can hear all the audience laughing.
Yeah.
I don't know, they're probably computer science jokes, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not limited to paleontology, so we'll have at least two or three people laughing at that bit.
Mm. Out of an audience of five. How does the song go? It's like 99 little bugs in my code, 99 little bugs. You take one down, you solve it. 170 little bugs in my code.
So, John, you mentioned SVP, and we've also talked about IPC4. These are just two of the conferences that we as Paleocast are going to be attending and reporting from. So we've also got the Geological Society of America, which is immediately but before SVP, which is the Society for Vertebrate Paleontology. And then we've got PALAS, which is the conference, their annual general meeting of one of our funding bodies that we're going to be live streaming. And so we've got four pretty major conferences coming up that we're going to be bringing to you guys, the audience, pretty soon, that we're all pretty excited about as well.
You know, because we needed to eliminate the kind of idea that all paleontologists do is go around the world and get drunk at conferences. So,
yes, I'm going to be bringing it to you sober. Unlike this episode, in which I've had a big glass of Laphroaig, which is a whiskey, which is nice.
Which tastes like mud.
It tastes like, yeah, peat.
Yeah. So at PALAS this year, are you going to be taking photos of all the alcoholic beverages you see, just like last time?
Did you notice that? Those are just the pictures that came out well. You know, I've got like a hard drive full of just whiskey pictures. We had the reception in the Jameson Distillery. Of course I was going to take pictures of whiskey. So those conferences have given us a little idea about what we're going to be doing in the future.
But there's also some other things that we've got going on. So probably a lot of you have noticed the Paleo 101 section of the website, which is really rather underdeveloped. So that is going to be something that we're going to concentrate on doing in the future.
A lot of people learn about fossils in school when they're learning about evolution, for instance. But the curricula uses examples of fossils that are either very rare or valuable or difficult to get hold of. So Paleo 101 is a project that addresses this by providing multimedia, so images, videos, photographs and accurate diagrams of these important fossils that are mentioned in the curricula to schools worldwide for free.
Yeah, and we're hoping to source all of the materials, as we do with the Paleocast podcast, directly from the academics. So it's not just for PhD students and one professional paleontologist, but actually coming directly from the researchers involved in the research in these animals and plants. So we're really hoping to produce a high academic level of accuracy in all of these materials and making sure that everything's relevant to what's being taught in the curriculum. So we've got a lot of people already signed up for this project to help us with producing materials. We've got academics, we've got academic institutions, media professionals, design professionals, fossil photographers all on board. So it's a really exciting project, and hopefully we'll be producing a lot of multimedia material pretty soon. So if you are a teacher or know a teacher who'd be interested in this project, it's all completely free. We'd just like to hear how teachers would most like to have this delivered to them. And hopefully this project is going to see us with a whole new section of a website, if not an entire new website, which is I've got some pretty crazy plans for. So hopefully they'll come to fruition.
But of course, Paleocast isn't just the website. We're also on Facebook and Twitter.
And we're just short of a significant Twitter milestone. We've got 995 followers at time of recording, which is like the 3rd of September or something. And so if this is going out on the 15th, we've got 1,000 followers, I'm going to say. I think we're going to get 5 in the next few days. So thank you, everyone, for following. And Facebook, we've only got about 520. So half of our Twitter followers aren't following on Facebook. So
What's that about?
Come on, Twitter people. Follow us on Facebook. You won't regret it. And it might be worth giving a shout out to some of the other paleontological podcasts.
Yes, when we started this project, we were the only one. But that's not the case anymore. There's a whole diversity of paleontology podcasts for you to get your paleo fill.
Yep, so we've got Paleo After Dark, which is run out of the University of Kansas, some of their
students. By your co-author, isn't it?
Yeah, by my co-author, James. Hello. That's all you're getting. And that's more of a... They do a higher level discussion, so it's pretty in-depth ideas and concepts in science, but all done at a pretty informal level. So if you are a researcher and just fancy listening to other researchers talking about research, then that's probably a pretty good one to listen to. And then the other ones?
There's Tetsu.
Yep. And there's also Pastime now as well.
Is it Pastime?
Yeah, I think it's the Pastime podcast. So the Tetsu podcast, which is the Tetrapod Zoology podcast, is run by Darren Naish and John Conway. Darren's a proper paleontologist with a proper job in academia. And John Conway's an amazingly talented paleo artist. And they talk about all things tetrapod, which is land vertebrates. So you, me, mammals, lizards, dinosaurs, the whole lot. And they also
go off on a few tangents, I think they wouldn't disagree with us saying. And then the Pastime podcast is one that we've only just gotten wind of here at PaleoCast. I haven't had a chance to listen to it, I'm sorry guys. But they do seem to have done quite a few topics that we were interested in.
I've had a listen. They've spent more time editing than us.
Yeah, the website seems pretty comprehensive in a lot of the posts, because we just do figures and then a few captions, and they've pretty much got an accompanying blog to each episode. So kudos for their professionalism.
So it's like a PaleoCast, but less lazy.
An American. So all the other ones have got British elements, and this one's a purely American endeavour, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
So for this episode, it's goodbye from me.
Oh no! We're not doing that.
Doing what?
And it's goodbye from me.
Could just do, you know, thanks for listening. We hope you've enjoyed the last year as much as we have. Don't forget, you can get involved with us on Facebook and Twitter. And if you have any episode suggestions, then just get in touch and we'll be happy to see what we can sort out.
Yeah, please get in touch if you've got an episode suggestion. We're always happy to look into what people want to hear about. So if you've got anything, it could be an episode on ducks, crocodiles, frogs,
mice,
bacteria.
Did you say ducks?
Ducks. Me and Dave were going to do an episode on ducks.
Wow.
Fungus.
Can you do anserophobia, the evolution of that?
I don't know what that is.
It's the fear that somewhere in some place at some point a duck is always watching you.
Does that fear fossilise well?
Probably. That actually does exist. Or at least there's a meme for it anyway.
Just let us know if you want any episodes on chasmotaspidids.
No.
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 If anybody thinks we should interview Dave and Joe and Laura as well about their research, to put them in the hotspot for once, do let us know as well.
And John. John doesn't get out of this.
No, I don't research. So. I'm just on Twitter all day. I don't do any research.
Just Twitter all day.
So yeah. See you next time, guys.
Yep, see you next time.
Yep.
Auf Wiedersehen.
That'll do.
PaleoCast was brought to you by Dave Marshall with John Tennant and Joe Keating. It was made possible by funding from the Paleontological Society and the Paleontological Association. Music was supplied by the Ocean Collective. Please visit paleocast.com for the supplementary material for this episode and for our archive of past programmes. Subscribe to our Twitter feed at paleocast and like us at facebook.com/paleocast to get all the latest news.
John, do you really, really bang on the keyboard?
Yep.
I need to have a cough first.
A cough?
Yeah.
Okay.
Otherwise I'm going to cough while you're recording.
You obviously haven't listened to the podcast before.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about it. That's going in the end now. What, your professionalism. I'm sorry, I have to cough first. Cough the recordings.
By the next scientist. They obviously trained me properly. No coughing in the studio.
Yeah, are you going to talk about your professional background?
I can if you want.
On a real podcast.
Sure.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
So,
about my website and self-promote shamelessly.
What website? Is your website up?
It's not on yet, but it will be soon.
Your website that's not on the internet. Yeah, let's talk about
that. It's on the internet. It's just you can't. Well, no, because then if teachers are listening, then they can get in touch with me because I need more teachers.
What's the website?
So it's a blog basically for school age children, or yeah, just school age people, not children, to write about science that interests them. So they can practice science journalism before they...
Oh, that'd be useful for you, John.
University.
He's trying to think of a witty comeback now.
Is he even still here?
I don't know, but I'm not complaining.
Yeah, there's just some thumps. Just throwing the microphone on the floor in protest.
We lost John.
I went to go and get another coffee.
All right. Did you hear any of that?
No.
All right.
Now that's going in the end.
Who the f*** is Alan? Because whoever it is calling me.
Add him to the conversation.
Alan?
Yeah.
Alan.
Add Alan.
Who is that?
I don't know.
Right, I'm just going to pick up and say hello, see who it is.
2 hours later.
John, what are you up to? Are you back with us?
What is going on?
I think... Has John dropped out?
He said he was going to answer the phone.
Well, he can't answer the phone when we're all in the conversation with him.
Okay, sorry about that. That was my nan.
You've got a pretty cool nan. Is all the Tennant family pretty up to date with the technology? Are they all on Twitter?
No.
Is that how you communicate?
No.
John, your tea's ready from mum.
At John Tennant.
At John. At Proto Hedgehog, your tea's ready.
Lol.
At Mum Hedgehog. No, shut up. Get off Twitter. People can see your writing.
This has been an omni-shambles.
Omni-shambles.
Which is a word in the dictionary now.
Is it?
It is. It means a situation that is shambolic from every perceivable angle.
Pretty much.